Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, listeners, it's been over 3 months since we had a new show, and I have put a little article on the Facebook page about this. Mostly, I really loved the interviews I did on cosmology, and I was just left not knowing where to go from there. So then I tried to schedule interviews and they didn't quite work out. So I thought this might be a message from Reiki to take a break. But luckily, we have an interview today and I'm very, very excited. Dr. Ranga Premaratna from Australia is going to be with us today, and I met him years ago. I don't know how many years ago, maybe 20. Maybe he'll know, because maybe he's better on time than I am. But I've been really wanting to interview him because he has such an interesting Reiki history, but also he has an amazing vocabulary of Reiki and treatments and how it affects your life as a student and so on. So I'm really hoping that we get more than one show with Ranga. So Ranga, thank you so much for being on our show and welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Phyllis. It's a great pleasure and honor to be on the show and reconnecting with you after so many years. I think probably it was maybe 1995, maybe 19 years ago that we first met. And then a little bit later on, I remember we met at the Reiki Australia meeting. Yeah.
And so that was really lovely.
Yes. Yes.
Great. So I would love for you to share your Reiki story, and maybe your Reiki story even starts before you met Reiki. Sometimes it does. So you can start wherever you'd like, and we'll listen.
All right. Thank you very much, Phyllis. As you said, it started before I actually met Reiki. I was born into a Buddhist family in Sri Lanka, so I was introduced to Buddhist philosophy and meditation quite young. And unfortunately, at that time, I wasn't quite wise enough to embrace that philosophy, and I actually rebelled against it. And until when I was about 16, when my grandfather, who was a very spiritual person who had a great influence in my life and in all of our family, and he got very sick and he was dying. And during that 2 or 3 weeks, I encountered this first experience with death of a close person.
Right.
And that led me to looking into meditation. And I was introduced to a small Buddhist library in a friend's house, and I was looking through these books, and I found this book, which is like the Bible of Buddhism. It's called Visuddhimagga, or the Path of Purification, which goes into all the meditation techniques. And I started reading and got interested in one particular method, and I started actually putting into practice. And within a very short time, it's like a few days, I really began to realize that my fear and my sadness and all of these things about my grandfather was not truly about my grandfather, but it was about myself, how I would lose him, how I wouldn't be able to see him. All of these were focused on me. So when I realized that and I could switch to looking into what can I do for him, that sadness, that fear, all of that disappeared. And I didn't know exactly I wish I had known Reiki at the time would have done, but I did my own meditation, loving kindness, and started spreading that energy to him to help his transition. And he had a very peaceful death. And from that point on, I was very, very keen to practice meditation and started practicing and doing it on a daily basis. But as everybody else, we stray away from the path again to be reminded. And the first reminder.
Yes. Well, that's a beautiful story about I'm amazed that you could understand this point so young. That's remarkable and in such a short time.
Yeah, I think it was, I was very fortunate that I made that switch and appreciated the meditation, because with that, as well as I was involved with martial arts, the Japanese martial arts called Kyokushin, which is a very tough, full contact style of martial arts, which actually helped me over my quick temper. I was very, very short tempered at the time. And the martial arts training also helped me a lot with my own mind, and it went well with the meditation practice. And then the second, the reminder came, and a very strong reminder, when I was, after my PhD at Purdue University, I went to University of Wisconsin. I was working at the Food Research Institute as a research scientist, and 3 years of very, very stressful research work in a toxic environment. This was the period of time that I first encountered Reiki. And I remember going to my favorite bookstore, which is called Shakti, on State Street in Madison, Wisconsin, and seeing a book called Reiki Factor. Because of the Japanese, bit of Japanese language experience with the martial arts, I started, I saw the book and I kind of, it resonated with me. So I picked it up. It was by Dr. Barbara Ray Weber, and I threw it, and I thought, oh, this is fantastic. If this is really true, you know, this is a great method, I'd like to learn. And I had done some little bit of reflexology. I was always interested in health things. So read the book, and I wanted to find out more, tried to find her phone number, went through all the, you know, different state directories, and finally found her number, called her. And this lady answered. I said, I'm sorry, I'm Dr. Barbara Ray Weber, but not the one that you're looking for. I'm a psychologist, so I forgot exactly details. I said, if you do find her, let me know as well, because quite a few people have been calling me about Reiki.
How amazing. That's incredible.
So then I thought, okay, what is the next step? I look in the, and it's funny that I was living, I had lived in Hawaii for a long time, 8 years, did my bachelor's and master's there, but I never heard of Reiki while I was there. I had to go to Wisconsin to find out about Reiki.
That's amazing.
And then I looked in the Yellow Pages and looked under Reiki, and sure enough, there was a advertisement for Reiki seminars. I called the guy, his name is Ken, and he said, I'm a Reiki 2 practitioner. I don't teach, so, but I can give you my teacher's number. And his name was Scott Jordan. So I called him, and he said, look, I'm going through some personal issues. I'm not ready to teach. But he said, well, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I was too impatient for that. So, no, I want it now. This is a great method. I need to learn. So following week, I went back to the, which is every week we go to have some lunch, and I went to the same bookstore. Then I saw a small advertisement for a Reiki class by a lady called Elke Petra Pampf. It's a German lady.
Yes.
Yeah, you probably know. And I called her. The organizer took the phone, and I paid the $100 deposit or whatever. And I went on. I still remember going on the first day. It was, I think, in November, maybe 1990. Very cold day, and for the introduction. So Friday night, we had about 10 people there. And she had a massage table. She told the story about Dr. Sui, you know, Mrs. Takata, this. And very simple story. And then she asked a volunteer to jump on the massage table to, you know, demonstrate Reiki. So a lady went up there, and Elke Petra was doing Reiki. But funnily enough, I didn't see her put her hands on the body. She was just working on the aura, on the energy field. And this lady started describing all kinds of experiences, these colors and this and that. I thought, oh, this is a setup. This is really cannot be. Because this, I'm from a very skeptical, very science, very oriented mind.
Of course.
So, and then at the end, they said, oh, anybody who wants to, you know, people who are enrolled for the class can stay. Anybody else who wants to join can join in. But, you know, there were six people, so we waited. And so she did the Reiki attunement process. And at the end of it, I said, well, I read in the book that you're supposed to feel this and this and that. I didn't feel anything except that what I normally meditate, I felt something, that's all. So she said that, she asked me, do you remember the card that you selected? Because she had these cards which with different names. I forgot what they were called, but I remember my one was the German word secret. And she said, yes. I said, yes. So what did he say? It's a secret. So she said, this is a kind of a secret attunement. You know, two reasons why is that one is because you are scientist, you are looking for something concrete, so you missed it altogether. other reason is that.
Good for Elke.
She had a bit of a, I think she had some psychic ability. So she said, other thing is I see you as being a healer for many lifetimes and that you were so familiar with the energy that you didn't feel it. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't quite happy with the explanation. So I went home a bit disappointed. And I remember getting back into my apartment and having, my wife was waiting. So we had dinner and we were watching TV. And then I started feeling some kind of vibration and some kind of heat in my palm. So I thought, oh, I was out there in the winter in the cold. I came in. I was all trying to rationalize how this can happen. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was going away. It was getting stronger and stronger. So I put my hands on my wife's back and she says, oh, wow, they're very, very hot. You know, your hands are never so hot. So that was the beginning of the initiation, I guess. And during the whole night, on and off, I would wake up. I could still feel the hand up to a point where they were painful. So wow. I definitely decided to go for the Saturday class and told Elke Petra. She said, yeah, that's, you know, the pain is because there's so much energy wanting to come out. And so I spent the 2 days, enjoyed the class. And I decided to, before she left for Germany, somehow managed to drag my wife also and got her attuned to Reiki 1, and which wasn't probably the best thing to do. It wasn't her wish, but I was so excited by it. And then before she left, I did the Reiki 2.
Uh-huh.
And then at that point, somehow there were some questions about the symbols that I weren't properly answered for myself. And then I thought, okay, I need to know more. I need to find the teacher. So strangely enough, same bookshop. Again, there was a little notice. This for another Reiki class by Beth Sanders. And I thought, okay, I'll call her. And I spoke to her and I liked her voice. There was a good energy in it and thought, okay, maybe I should go and do the master's. It was just like a weekend course. And I went, she came, I think, down from Milwaukee to Madison and we did the training again. It was, I didn't felt something, but I wasn't quite fully, satisfied with it. And so this kind of led me to go back into meditation and see what am I looking for? Why am I so eager? And I realized that, you know, I'm searching too eagerly and there's greed in it. I wanted something really badly and that I should let go and go back to my meditation practice. Mm-hmm. And that if I'm meant to be of service to other people, if I'm meant to learn this method for myself, to have myself, my family, and maybe other people, I will find the way and the teachings will be there for me. Mm-hmm. So I just kept doing my own meditation, kept practicing the Reiki that I learned every day, very, very, and practicing on people, whoever, my friends, my lab mates. And, right. And after about, I think it's maybe about 9 or 10 days, I had this strong urge to call a person in San Francisco who had Crohn's disease and colitis, who was suffering from it very seriously. So I thought maybe there might be somebody over there who might want to learn, might be able to, he can go and get some treatments.
Right.
So I called him and I was speaking to him about Reiki. So this is a kind of extraordinary part of my experience with Reiki is that he said, there is a visitor here in my apartment who is asking, who is talking about Reiki, who wants to know about Reiki. So at that point, he said, who is it? He said, I have this Japanese monk who I met as I was coming for lunch across this small park on his way from work. And he was sitting there under a tree, was meditating. And as a Buddhist, I realized that although he was wearing kind of Japanese, Chinese style of robes, that he must be a monk. So he went and asked him whether he had any lunch. So would you like to come over to have some lunch? So he came. And he was there. So I said, I'd love to talk to him. And then, so his English wasn't very good. So I said, do you teach Reiki? Because I'm now looking for a teacher. He said, yes. And I said, can you teach me? And he said, no. I was a bit taken aback. So, okay, what about, but he said, but I can teach you meditation. So I said, okay, maybe he's seeing something that is more useful for me than Reiki. And I said, I'd love to learn meditation. And he said, yes, I will teach you and I will come. And then I think I was so excited. I said, okay, thank you very much. And I put the phone down. And within about 2 minutes, I realized that I hadn't made any arrangements. And I just immediately I called back and the friend took the phone and he said, okay, can I speak to this person again? Because I need to make some arrangements. And he said, oh, he's gone. I said, I don't believe it. I said, no, he cannot be gone. Just go and try to find him. He couldn't be that far. You know, he just left. And after about half an hour, he called me back and said, no, I cannot find him anywhere. He's just gone. He just had finished his dinner lunch by that time. So he just went. And, so I thought, okay, let go again. This is very disappointing. And, but I thought, well, that probably wasn't the right teacher. So I just, didn't really forget about it, but I just kind of went back to my meditation again and, you know, kept focusing on the Reiki that I learned and practicing. So after about, I think about, could have been about 2 weeks later that, I was, as a habit, I walked from the Food Research Institute alongside the Lake Mendota to the Student Union where we have, I have lunch. And as I was walking one day, there's a small clearing and I could feel some kind of, funny movement, like rustling movement of, you know, and because usually people go there for ice fishing. So I stopped over and I looked and I saw this Chinese looking man with a top knot, doing some kind of qigong, like Tai Chi, like exercise.
Oh,
it's interesting. So I thought, I'm always interested in martial arts. So I sat on the grass and was just watching him. And he did this for about 5-10 minutes, very powerful movements. And I could actually feel this like energy, in the movements. And he looked like he was about 60 years old. And, so after he finished his ritual, he stopped and he started walking towards me and I got up and I, you know, greeted him and he said, oh, so you ready to learn? So I said, I thought, oh, maybe he's trying to teach me this. He wants to teach me this martial arts qigong technique. So I said, oh, I'm always open to this. Yes. But I didn't realize until a little bit later on that it was actually my teacher.
Oh.
And he came, I still have no idea. And then I took him, to my apartment and we started the training. And as he said, he didn't teach me Reiki. He said first is meditation. And, we sat, like his sittings were like 4 hours. One sitting is 4 hours. So the first 2 days were just sitting.
Wow.
He didn't teach anything. He just said, you do your own meditation. You sit, you meditate. And I could do like 2 hours of sitting towards the end. It's hard for me. 1.5 hours is okay. Towards the end of the 2 hours, I was really like fidgeting. I thought, okay, when is it going to finish? And I then had this strong feeling to open my eyes. Open my eyes, I could see him gazing at me and immediately I could go back into meditation. I just like closed my eyes, went into meditation. Next thing I remember is a small little light bell ringing and uh-huh. That was it for another two hours. So 2 days of that. And then he said, okay, we can do some Reiki now. So that's how it started. And the interesting thing was that he taught me this exercises that he was doing. He said, this is a great exercise for getting your energy moving and great for strengthening your body to do more meditation. So we started doing this exercise. And for the first 2 days, I learned it very quickly because I had done martial arts kata for a long time. So
mm-hmm.
During that, there are still moments of standing meditation. In that moment, I could see certain geometric patterns and various things started coming to my mind. So I asked him, what are these things that I'm seeing? So he said, draw them. So I started drawing them, and he said, okay, this is kind of a confirmation that you have been doing this kind of thing before. Uh-huh. And then he started teaching me the Reiki that he learned, because he was trained in the Usui system up to a certain point. And then he went back to India, Nepal, Tibet, he traveled for about 20 years, and he met a group of monks who had learned this older method. So that was what he meant, that I'm now, what I teach is based on this older method, and he taught me that method. So that's why I changed the name to Jin Kedo, meaning the Reiki way of compassion and wisdom, and which emphasizes a lot of meditation. So that is where, and after about 20 days of training, he left, and my big reminder came when, after about 4 months after he left, I was partially diagnosed with lymphoma, because I had started getting a big lump on my neck, I ignored for about, you know, a couple of months, because I was very busy. I didn't realize it was serious. And also I trusted that I'm doing Reiki and practicing all these wonderful things, meditation, and I know it cannot be something serious, but about 2 or 3 months, the lump became bigger, and I could move my neck, although I was feeling fine. There was restriction in my movement, so I thought, okay, I better go to the university hospital. And I went there. They did all the tests, and after 2 days, the doctor asked me to come. I came back, and he said, wait here. I will get somebody else to come in. Brought the professor of oncology, and he started explaining the results and said, look, there's a very high possibility you have lymphoma. I forgot whether it's Hodgkin's or non-Hodgkin's.
Oh, yeah.
And we need to do this and this and this. These steps need to be done immediately. I was, you know, voice in my head said, well, how can that be? You know, I'm doing all these good things. This cannot be. And anyway, I said, if the body produces something, there's a cause. And if I can remove the causes, I can get rid of the effect. So I didn't stick to the label. I thought, I will look at the causes myself. Uh-huh. So I told him, can I come back in 2 months' time? He said, no. He almost stepped back. He said, no, you won't be here in 2 months. So I said, okay. But I left. I made an appointment in 2 months' time, and went home. Did my meditation as I was taught. And I could see, actually very clearly, I could see the 5 or 6 of the causes. One was, it's like a cartoon, one was my stomach was like running to the vending machine, which is just around the corner from the lab. That's really called fast food. Just go 2 seconds, you have your coffee, you have your, ice cream, and it's a fantastic machine at that time, I thought.
I
was there for, you know, working 10 hours. 12 hours sometimes, and no sunlight, and a lot of stress. I could see my stomach doing that, and I could see my heart going and doing the healing and the meditation. I could see my brain looking under the microscope, you know, looking at the work, and all over it was this dark kind of cloud. And after the meditation, I realized this dark cloud was partly the toxicity, but partly it was the guilt feeling I was having, because I was feeling guilty that I wasn't working up to my potential, the perceived potential, that my boss, you know, I felt like I was disappointing him, because he was such a great guy, very wonderful, generous person, let me do whatever I wanted to do. He knew I was doing Reiki and everything. So I felt really bad, and I carried that guilt for a long time. But so first thing I did was I went and had a chat with him and said, look, this is what's happened. And he said, right away, take 2 months off, just come to the lab just to supervise the students, finish your annual reports, because I was coming to the end of a contract. That was a great relief. So the rest was, I changed my diet completely, almost vegan, as much organic as much as I could. Rest was, I didn't know much about supplements and herbs. Went to the local health food shop and got a couple of herbs like echinacea. Nothing really, I had no real knowledge. And the rest was just Reiki and meditation. And I had a few students I had taught at the time. They came and they did treatments. Uh-huh. And within 2 months, the tumor, the lump, kind of broke into 2 or 3 pieces and softened. And by the time the 2 months came, it was almost like a small button, it's soft. And during that 2 months, my best friend lives here. He said, why don't you come to Australia? So I said, okay, I will apply. We got the visa very fast. And, you know, we'll give it a try. If it doesn't work out, I can come back and get back into another research position. So I migrated to Australia in 91 and still kept looking for research positions, but nothing worked out, fortunately. And then I thought we'd start a business because I had the background in food and nutritional science. So we had a health food store, and which became more of a practice. And that's been 24 years I've been here. So that's my my story. So Reiki really changed completely, turned me my life 180 degrees. And what I did was I initially kind of shared this Reiki with a few people, and it's spread more and more. And I'm glad to say that, you know, just like you, you know, you through your grandmother, and you know, the Reiki has spread like that. We are here to serve people, and we are helping. When I hear the stories of people's experiences, that's the most rewarding thing, that we are, whatever we did has actually helped many people change their lives and help their health. So that's kind of a where I'm at now. So.
Right. But, and, my understanding, Ranga, is that I don't know if you've, taken the teaching that you received from this monk and mm-hmm. then put it together with things of your own life to create a new form in the sense of that we all, I think, as masters do that. We have our own personalities and our own experiences. Or was it more that you just took what he offered you and deepened that experience?
I think
am I making myself clear?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah. Because I wanted to keep the teachings that he taught as pure as possible. So in my manuals or whatever I wrote, I have kept it. But whatever I have introduced as part of my own through my experience, I have kept them separate. Uh-huh. But I am seeing now is more and more as my meditation experience deepens, my perception of Reiki and my experience of Reiki has changed significantly. So things that I'm teaching now are that has the flavor of my own experience.
Right.
Yeah, but the his teaching, whatever he taught me, have been kept intact as it is. But he himself, whatever he taught, had changed quite a lot from the original teachings of Reiki. Because of his experience with the Indian, the traditional, the Buddha method, which is the older method that he learned. So he's kind of infused that knowledge into the Reiki that taught me. So it's already had changed quite significantly from the Usui Shikiri or the, you know, teaching. So that's why the chakra system is more emphasized and the treatment positions are different. And, you know, so there are some differences. But the emphasis has been always on meditation, and that comes from that, from the older method, and also from my own love of meditation. So I have expanded some of the concepts through my own experience. Yeah.
Well, I'm very, very impressed, I would say, clearly, by what you receive in your meditations. And I'm just wondering, do you feel like that's something that everybody has access to, no matter what kind of meditation they do?
Yeah. I mean, meditation, it depends on, you mean what kind of Reiki do you do or what kind of?
No, what kind of meditation you do. So here's my underlying thought. So yeah. So my story about meditation is that when I came into Reiki, I was really floundering in my life. And in about 10 years, I realized that Reiki was actually doing something with my life. So I thought I should, and everybody around me, like my students and other masters and so on, they were almost all of them were practicing some form of meditation. Mm-hmm. Many of them from the Indian continent that comes from a guru tradition or sometimes from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in Hawaii, there are these Japanese Buddhist traditions that are very different than the Tibetan Buddhists from the outside that I can perceive. So mm-hmm. I was wandering around trying to find a meditation teacher. And because I felt like I was really drawn to meditate, but I didn't really know how to do it. I mean, that sounds maybe kind of silly, but mm-hmm. I needed guidance. And mm-hmm. finally, one of my dear friends who actually meditated, but his meditation was from the Native American culture. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, you already have a meditation practice, you just don't know it. And that's mm-hmm. when you practice Reiki, it's mm-hmm. like you're meditating because you're quiet, you don't speak, you're mm-hmm. You must sometimes feel that you're in another plane of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I never thought of it like that. So mm-hmm. I went, well, maybe that's true. And so and the interesting part is, as much as Reiki led you to this man, mm-hmm. Reiki led me away from meeting people that that I would do. Like, I really, really wanted to sit with the Dalai Lama. And I made several attempts to go to things. And mm-hmm. just at the last minute, something very critical would happen in different ways, and I couldn't go. And by the time that I figured this out, I went, well, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do. So mm-hmm. with that background, I believe that whatever path of meditation or I don't like calling it a technique because I don't feel like it's really a technique. Is it?
Yeah.
No, it's
meditation.
It's a practice. So whatever practice of meditation that you do, that it leads you to the same, it can lead you to the same planes of consciousness. So I'm just wondering if that's true.
Yeah, that's very true. Because even if you look at from a Buddhist point of view, we have in Buddhist philosophy something called Abhidhamma, or the deeper understanding, deeper philosophy, or the ultimate truth of the universe. And if we go into that, there are four ultimate truths. One is consciousness, and there's another one that works with consciousness, which is called the mental factors that support our consciousness. Uh-huh. And the third one is matter, which is the form, the body, all the four elements. And the fourth one is called nirvana, or the enlightened state of consciousness. So I believe that this consciousness, this ultimate state of consciousness, is the same as Ray in the Ray key. And the uh-huh. key aspect consists of the other three realities, mm. the mind, the mental factors, and the matter. So ultimately what we're trying to do is to truly understand the mind and the body interactions. And when we're doing, actually, when we do Reiki, rather than doing Reiki, eventually we become Reiki. We are being Reiki. If we get to that, we know we are Reiki. And then we can see like how certain mental states that arise in meditation, for example, when you get into we call an absorptive state or a dhyana, there are certain factors. The first factor is you always have to direct your mind to the object. Second is you have to be able to sustain it, keep the attention on the breath or a mantra or whatever the object is. And when uh-huh. you keep putting that attention over and over, your mind is now focusing inward and it's concentrating, it's building its energy, and the energy starts to increase in strength. This is called the vertical development of the mind. When that starts to happen, the third factor, which is called intrinsic joy. Now, this is exactly what I call Reiki when the Reiki flows through me. I feel this beautiful, joyful, pleasant energy. So then when that starts to flow through the body, the body's energy, all the chakras, all this harmonize. And when that happens, the body actually loses its gross qualities, and the mind can now experience the very subtle nature of the body. And eventually it cannot experience the body as such a thing anymore. At that point, we have another mental state called contentment, where you feel absolute peace and a state of deep comfort, where you don't have the definite, the different, the gross qualities of the body, pain and comfort. And eventually, you kind of slowly dip into this state of single-pointedness. So Reiki is such a powerful, Reiki as a technique, if you look at it as a, just a technique of using for healing, that immediately takes you to that third factor, joy and contentment, and into that deeper resonance state where you're connecting to the higher energy field of Rei, the universal state. So it is a path to enlightenment, and I believe that I get a lot of people to practice Reiki, so they find that path to get into their spiritual path, and then whatever their meditation technique is or practice is, Reiki finds, shows them the way in a way. So, I don't know much about the Native American methods, but I know a little bit about, Ho'oponopono,
right,
which is a wonderful Hawaiian method that I recently was introduced to, and I find it such a, there's a connection to my own Buddhist kind of practice. So,
That's fascinating. Yeah. Let's see. Well, I don't want to get off on a tangent here. So, yeah. Well, that's really fascinating. So can you just clarify something for me?
Yeah.
Because I know that, there are many, different forms of Buddhism in Japan, and I've been, you know, through my family and my own history and so on, I know that there are many different, I would say, expressions of Japanese Buddhism, but they have a very distinct flavor. And then the Tibetan Buddhism, of course, I think all of us now are really familiar with some of the tenets of Tibetan Buddhism and the process of Tibetan Buddhism. And I had, there are many Reiki masters now who practice a form of Tibetan Buddhism. And then there's the Buddhism in India and the Buddhism in China. And then I'm wondering about Sri Lanka. So, you know, these different expressions of Buddhism, there is a, of course, a similarity, a basic similarity that binds all of this, but is the expression in Sri Lanka a bit different than, I mean, has a different kind of flavor as the others do?
Yeah, this Buddhism originally, after the Buddha's passing away, it spread to, it didn't flourish in India because Hinduism was very dominant,
right,
and the Hinduism actually kind of integrated Buddhism and it changed a lot. And then Buddhism before that went to Sri Lanka. So it kept in its early form and then also went to Thailand and Burma. So Burma, Thailand and Sri Lanka have that early form of Buddhism, which we call Theravada. And then when it went to Tibet, because of the Tibetan belief system at the time, the monks who took Buddhism to Tibet had to integrate all the aspects of that culture. So we have many, and also as time went, you know, Buddhism kind of evolved into having many, many skillful methods of visualization, many deities, and part of it is through the Hindu tradition, part of it is through the Bon tradition of the Tibetan. So,
right.
And as it went to different countries, like into China, into Japan, it took the flavor of the existing spiritual traditions. So, you know, so that's how it changed. But the fundamental aspects are still the same. And meditation, most of the time, meditation is a very, very essential part. But in some, I know some sects of Buddhism that, devotion and faith and that part plays a major role. So it depends on who the person who is looking for that. Because some people might attract to the devotional part of it. Some people might look at the more the meditative part of it. So
right.
It has, it caters to many different personalities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have one question about your teacher, and I'm just wondering, do you know if he taught others the same method? Or, I mean, because I only know you, so I'm just wondering, is there more, are there more teachers or are there more students that he taught that you know of?
Yeah, this is a question that has been asked from me many times, and I think my teacher foresaw this and also foresaw that many people would go on a search to find out, and I can tell you only what he told me. He said that he has healed people, helped the method to help people, taught some meditation techniques, but I was the only person who he taught it as a system, because that was what I was looking for. So I don't know anyone, or he hasn't told me of anyone who he has taught. So when I tell this to people, meaning at least a couple of people that I told, some of them are my students, don't quite believe it. And then they kind of accuse me, saying that, well, it's very advantageous for you to say that you are the only person who is teaching this. And I said, well, I mean, I'd love to find somebody else that he has taught. If you ever find somebody, please let me know. I'd love to communicate with them and share my experiences. Right. But so far, there have been stories of somebody finding somebody in Nepal and all kinds of stuff, but nothing came up to. And there's a very good reason why he specifically didn't disclose some of his information. When I asked him questions like, oh, where in Japan did you come from? What was the place? You know, he kept silent, or when he couldn't stop me from asking questions, he asked me a few questions. He said, let me ask you something. He said, do you know where you come from? And do you know where you're going? I obviously didn't just take it that I came from Sri Lanka. it's a deeper question than that. And I knew that I had no answer. I had no idea where I came from. I had no idea or no power to tell him that I know where I'm going. So, and then he said, this time is very limited. He didn't say in exactly these words, but, you know, time is limited. Do your best. Learn and practice and use it. That is his message. And he felt like the past is already gone. The future is just illusion. We cannot treat it. This moment, the present moment, is where we create our reality. So experience that reality. Even the present moment is illusion, because by the time we realize it is already gone to the past. So he said, just develop the mind. And that was his message. So I have basically no answers to a lot of these questions. And unfortunately, I wish I had even had a taken picture. So it looks like there's a lot of things that are not, you know, clear. And all I say is practice the method that's like I did. And if you like it, if it benefits you, follow it. Otherwise, you can always find something else. And I didn't start to make it into a huge organization or anything. I just wanted to help a few people, and they grew to other, you know, growing into other, you know, larger groups of people. And as human beings, we are always very curious, and, you know, but I feel very blessed that I received these teachings, and I changed my life. It has changed people that I could help. And now many patients that I see, I teach them Reiki, I teach them meditation. And so as far as I know, there's nobody that he has told me that he has taught as Reiki, or because he left after learning the Reiki from his teacher. He left Japan. He spent a long time in India and Tibet, so he could have taught somebody, but, you know, I have no idea if there are any.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What I thank you very much for sharing that. I don't mean to imply disbelief, because I don't. And one of the things that is occurring, of course, in the practice that I hold is that now, because our founder is not so mysterious, and then the rest of the people are actually people that can be traced back historically, we're having to wrestle with the same question, like, how much do we give in to our own intellectual need for confirmation? How much information is needed to back up our own experience? And personally, one of the things that happened fairly early on in this whole research thing was one of the quote researchers decided that Mikao Usui never existed. So somehow this got out in print and it went to Italy. And I have no idea why Italy. I'm just like, it was totally strange. So Reiki had just gotten to Italy and there were several masters teaching there. Very, you know, it was in the days where there were lots of classes and lots of activity and stuff. Yeah. And I was getting, and no email, no anything, hardly used telephones because it wasn't really a big deal back then. It was a big deal actually because it cost so much. So I got these letters and messages about I'm quitting Reiki because there was no Mikao Usui. And I thought, how could you give up your experience, your profound experience, because somebody said that this man didn't exist?
Yeah.
And I tell you, it's kind of like one of those Zen Koan kind of puzzles. It's like the nature, the characteristic of human nature and our conversation with our mind and how much we need to know and how much that need gets translated into forming our own reality is pretty shocking.
Yeah. In fact, I was just before I had this Skype meeting with you, I was watching a YouTube video of a very, very respected monk, a meditation master in Sri Lanka, now that we have access to these wonderful things. So I was listening to that and the question was posed to him saying that just what I explained to you about this Buddhist Abhidhamma, which is a very profound teaching. And there are a lot of monks in Sri Lanka themselves who are, you know, well-established, well-known monks who were saying that the Buddha never preached this particular sutta, the Abhidhamma. It was created by later group of monks. And so he was explaining in detail how it's impossible for a normal human being to be able to teach such a subtle teaching. And because I'm studying it and I understand through my own experience that it has to be somebody who is a fully enlightened being with a very subtle, very powerful mind to be able to penetrate the density of our own consciousness and break it down to see how it works and how the matter, when it breaks down into, this is going beyond quantum physics, like going to explain 2,600 years ago, how these energies are there. That how they function. So coming from a scientific background, I can truly appreciate it. And this is very similar things that people are still questioning great teachers like the Buddha or Jesus. Who knows whether they were there? You know, it's all hearsay written down written down by somebody else and passed through oral tradition or whatever. But this, as you said, this is the experience. If the experience rings true to you and it has transformed your life and it's worthwhile pursuing it. Yeah.
Right. Because in the end, it is an accumulation of experiences that helps form our reality, how we see our reality individually. And then that reality, helps substantiate our community reality and our world reality. So,
yes,
is that true for you?
Very true. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's like, how can you give up these incredible experiences? I just don't understand it. So it's a very interesting place for me to practice compassion.
Yes.
Sometimes. Very true. Because sometimes students say, but I read it on the internet, you know, and I'm going, oh my gosh. I mean, or this isn't historical fact. And I, You know, my lesson about history as an American, so I just own my own ignorance about being in a culture that's fairly new on the planet. And though we have had wars, you know, we've engaged in warfare here, it was nothing like World War I and World War II.
Yeah.
And so I go to Europe, you know, this like American naive person.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I invite all these Reiki students to Germany because I think this is where I like to be. And I had a friend who had a center and it was easy for me and everything. And I immediately learned that it wasn't easy for all these people to come to Germany. And then I realized, oh, wow. I mean, and they taught me the depth of passion and commitment they had to Reiki to break through these life experiences that they had, that they swore that they would never go to Germany or never hear the German language again and so on. I mean, it was amazing. Yeah. But, you know, the really interesting thing for me is that those people were much more willing to confront their own barriers that they found after doing this because it kind of broke up these our internal barriers, you know, the ones that we set up for ourselves. So I found it fascinating, and I find the nature of how Reiki affects different cultures so amazingly different, and it is like healing the culture as well as healing the individual. And I'm amazed at that, and I'm wondering if you have also felt that.
Yeah, I mean, my experience, I have quite a few students who came from the Middle East and did some training with me, went back, and they have set up a center like in Bahrain, and there are so many people who are, I mean, transforming their lives and their way of thinking because of Reiki. That's why Reiki is really truly universal. The experience is universal, so people then don't look at through their Islamic eyes or Buddhist eyes or something else, but they feel the experience and they see the changes, and we have like quite a large number of people in Bahrain, Kuwait, all of these areas really practicing Reiki and really practicing compassion, and it's very needed in these areas, so I'm very happy that it has spread to that area, and so definitely it has a powerful way of bringing peace and tranquility to individual, and then through that to the community and family community and to the whole country.
That's wonderful to hear. wonderful. So I'm just wanting to connect with you and let you know that it's been an hour, amazingly. And I'm wondering if you would be willing to continue for another 30 minutes or so.
Yeah, I'd love to. I have time, yeah.
No problem. Okay, great. Good. Then we'll just go for it.
Yeah.
So you've settled in Australia, and I've been to Australia, and I lived there for basically had my stuff there for 2 or 3 years, and I really love the Australian land. I mean, it's very alive and very substantial. So Ranga, you still have your health food store?
Yeah, I have the shop. It's been there for like 24 years now.
Yeah.
And I have a daughter. She's 18 and she's just started university.
Right.
And my son is 15, so he's still in year 9. So quite a few things going on.
Right. Well, you lead a very active life then. So I'm wondering... In Reiki and in the Reiki practice that you have, you do a lot of treatments?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, when people get into treatments, it feels like there is a lot of expectation about what Reiki can offer. And I'm just wondering how you handle that in your treatment practice, because it's so fascinating for me. I mean, I have had kind of my own miracle stories. I think every Reiki practitioner has.
Yeah.
And then you have your other ones that you treat and treat and treat, and you think, well, what is really happening? And now, after all my years of practice, I feel that something is happening. I just can't see it. So I have more trust in Reiki and the process that it's bringing the person to. But I'm just wondering and trying to see if you have a way of expressing what your experience is and where you go with this.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I do for myself regarding expectation is that we have a practice when we say Reiki Jin Kedo, Jin aspect, which basically means benevolence, so having a good wishing, kind of well-wishing kind of mind. Benevolence can be broken down into four aspects, and one of them is loving kindness, one of them is compassion, third one is sympathetic joy, and the fourth one is equanimity. So I teach people before they start the practice, the treatment, focus on those four. First of all, when you start treating, you think of with loving kindness, universal friendliness, that is you, that breaks that barrier between you and that other person. You think of that person as your best friend, your mother, your, you know, family member, something like that. And then you think of, okay, this person is here because of some suffering. So you think of yourself, I have gone through suffering, various kinds of suffering. So I have compassion for myself, and compassion requires action. So what can I do for this person to alleviate their suffering? We have a wonderful tool. We have a wonderful method. This is Reiki. So I can now do some Reiki for this person. So I start doing the Reiki. Then I begin to feel this joy of helping this person. And I might see that person's breathing change or something happens. So I assume that, okay, this person is benefiting from this energy. And I feel, I rejoice with that. So this is sympathetic or appreciative joy. So build up your energy. You feel good. And then at the end is equanimity, letting go. We have no outcomes, expected outcomes. We let go, whether it's a great outcome or nothing happened, let go. So with that kind of meditation, it helps me personally to not to expect too much, or even when it something great happens, not to let it affect your ego. And that's been very, very effective for me. But at the same time, you know, you have miracles. Like I had somebody who had a, you know, throat cancer, a tumor that disappeared within like one treatment. And then there are other people who had, didn't have a cure, but they had a healing. So this one person who had pancreatic cancer, he passed away. But in that passing away, he had a very peaceful mind because of the Reiki treatments and because I taught his wife Reiki as well. They had something positive to do. So, you know, there are sometimes we believe in the karmic kind of force. There are certain times when maybe there is not going to be a cure, but you can still get the healing. So, so I always keep that open, saying that whatever I can do, I will do. And, you know, the energy will do the best way for that person.
Thank you. That's very clear. Could you repeat the four, what did you call them?
Yeah, the first one is, the Pali word is metta. Metta is loving kindness, or metta comes from the word mitra, meaning from Sanskrit. It means friend. So general feeling of friendliness. And when you have a friend, you are caring about, they care about you. There's a harmony. So it's a sense of harmony, harmonious feeling, harmonious communication. So metta or loving kindness is the first aspect. Second is compassion or karuna. So that comes when you feel pain in somebody or yourself. You immediately want to take some action to help. And because we have such a wonderful tool, we can immediately use it on ourselves or that person. So that's compassion. And the third one is called mudita. Mudita is it has a softness about it. It's about rejoicing. When somebody else is joyful, we join with them and we rejoice and enjoy with them. So that is very powerful because it is the opposite of envy and jealousy. And that gives you a very good feeling in your heart, a very pleasant feeling. This is where the Reiki really resonates with it. And the last one is being able to let go, equanimity, being able, very, very balanced mind about everything. So those four aspects are contained within the Jin aspect of the Reiki Jin Kedo. K aspect is the wisdom aspect, which is the more meditation.
That's really beautiful. Thank you. I can see where that where these aspects build sort of naturally in a Reiki person. Can you tell me let's see if I can form the question. So I feel that Reiki, it seems like any Reiki practice, if the student is sincere and actually practices and practices in a conscious manner, that these aspects will arise. But I'm wondering, since you do this consciously, you know, have a focus on these four aspects, do you feel that the Reiki student then has more of a matrix or a kind of a system in which to move around? So do you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, I understand.
Okay,
because these qualities are intrinsically in our heart. We have the purest of metta, purest of karuna, purest of mudita and upek. All those four aspects are deeply within us. And when we keep doing Reiki, they will naturally come up. But giving them the framework or the foundation, it helps them to kind of understand it a little bit better when these mental states arise. So we do individual meditations on metta, loving kindness. These are not just necessarily Reiki Jin Kedo practices. These are universal meditation practices that have integrated into the system to help the student. Because people tend to get too attached to the outcome or get too attached to the suffering of a person.
Exactly.
And they kind of carry that with them in their mind. So this is because I've seen patients with, you know, very terrible situations where you cannot avoid being kind of, you know, involved with them. So when you keep doing this practice, you are able to give 100% to that person without having any aversion and, when you know, fear. And also you don't take away unnecessary burden yourself. So these intrinsic qualities are there. And by training them with the meditation, giving them metta as a separate meditation, compassion as a separate meditation, and joy as a separate meditation, and equanimity, they build slowly, step by step, individually, like metta will lead to a bit of karuna to mudita. Like they are step by step progressive levels in meditation. So it is definitely giving them, if you instruct them, it will help them to develop it, you know, more productively, more
Wonderful. Thank you. So along that line, but a bit more general, one of the things that I feel is a gift of all Reiki practices is that as human beings, we're connected back to this vital energy called Reiki that we have inside of us. And it is our conscious use of Reiki that allows us to discover that we are much more than who we thought we were before Reiki. So there's always this really interesting kind of funny slang thing that people sometimes do where they go, oh, is that before Reiki or after Reiki? And I'm just wondering if this sparks something in you, because I'd be really interested to hear.
It is, I feel like Reiki is like a light, like a switch that once you are attuned and once you experience Reiki, it's like a light switch being turned on. And that light then can focus on areas of darkness that you have in different areas of your life. And once in a while you see, those areas light up and then they brought to the surface so you can work on it. It hasn't happened to me many times. And even now we know you get, certain aspects are brought up to the surface and to show that, you know, you haven't overcome this. And it's usually with the closest of who you are, the people that you love the most or who are closest to you that right. push all your buttons. So the Reiki, I felt like for me, it brings to, you know, when you look at a very, very ultimate level, Reiki, meditation and all of that, you know, they're all part of our consciousness. So we are brought, our awareness is brought to those areas because of that Reiki, initial Reiki, influence. So it starts to, as I said, for me, I'm sure for everybody, initially Reiki is a way of doing something. I'm going to do the treatment. Right. Eventually it becomes state of being. And when people there are some Qigong masters and other people say, oh no, you cannot do Reiki, or Vipassana practitioners will say, oh, you cannot do Reiki when you're meditating. You know, it's just because they don't understand what Reiki is. You know, Reiki is a state of being. You're connected to a state that you always had. And if you are in that state, whatever you do will be enhanced. So that's what I find. It's like a switch, light switch that's turned on, and that light will sweep, and once in a while will bring you some dirt corner, some dirt you have swept under the rug or something that you need to clean up.
Uh-huh. Right. Beautiful. Thank you.
And yourself, how is your life going? How is your...
my life is going really well.
Excellent.
Yeah. I had a diagnosis. The last time I came to Australia, I think, was in 2009.
Uh-huh.
And wasn't that when we met at the...
I think so, yeah. I think that was the Reiki Australia.
Yeah. And then immediately after I came back, in a few months, I had a diagnosis of breast cancer, and I went through the treatments, and I had 4 years of clearness, and then I had this metastasis in my leg. Mm-hmm. And it just is kind of silly sounding mm-hmm. that my breast cancer moved to my leg bone. And because I go to an oncologist, and I also have a naturopathic oncologist, and the two of them are working together through me. And I really appreciate this. I want to say that Dr. Rachel Schwartz and Dr. Daniel Rubin, the naturopath, report to each other. They talk with each other about me. And I really, I'm so blessed by this. And anyway,
That's the best way, yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And then, of course, as much Reiki as I can get, which is a lot.
Yeah.
So I just had a blood test, and my tumor markers, one of them is now normal, and the other one has gone down a lot and is starting to keep going down. So the direction is good. And,
fantastic.
And I'm now recovered what I would call my real energy level. Because it was just so damped down by lots of different things. And I think I got to see, Ranga, not just my little corners of dirt, but a whole room that I had shut up. You know, I went out and I started to, travel and, you know, have all this outward, expression of Reiki. And I did do some of my own work, you know, because you can't help it. But I feel like what happened when I had my breast cancer diagnosis is I just went, oh, okay, now it's time for you. And the last 6 years or 7 years have been really about me, and it's been an amazing process. Yeah. And it's been an incredible gift. And my life is... very different because of it. And I couldn't have done this without Reiki in the same way. Yeah. I just, it's just, allowed me to have a really good attitude. It's, allowed me to see the benefit of everything that comes to me, even though it's been really painful sometime and really unpleasant. Mm. And it's really shown me the depth of Reiki. It's not, it really is not a technique. It's, it's a way of, it starts out kind of on the technique level. But then if you allow it to permeate your life, there's a place in which, as you say, you become Reiki and then, your whole decision-making process changes and all of this is such an amazing, it's really amazing. And I, see the value in surrender. And I think that's very interesting because I'm, you know, I'm a bit of a rebel, as you can probably guess by now. And, and, you know, during my cancer treatment experience, you know, I just had to surrender myself to the doctors and also to surrender myself to Reiki because if I didn't, I didn't have the energy to do anything else actually. And I found it to be a really rewarding thing to do. Yeah. And I don't really know how to pass that on to people, around me. Like I was with this woman, a dear, dear woman. I just love her a lot. And she passed away last night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you know, I could, she said, I'm not afraid of dying, and I knew that that was true for her. And there was a part of her that had to keep doing stuff. And I wanted, I said, you know, have you thought about surrendering to the process rather than trying to use up your energy in, well, what if this, you know, well, what about this? I said, you know, it's, so I'm on some level, I see that she did surrender at some point and how much she did, I don't know, but, surrender is huge. And and it doesn't mean for me like giving myself away. It actually means taking myself back. Somehow.
Exactly. Yes, yes, that's very true. Yeah, I think part of the with meditation is also in a way when you every time you meditate, you completely surrender your ego to the greater consciousness. So you it's a way of dying in that moment, completely letting go, and that practice eventually helps at the moment of death or moment of any challenge to also completely surrender and put yourself in the hands of the universe. And that's one of the things I did when I was, when I got the diagnosis and I decided that I'm going to surrender and just, I'm doing everything I can, but at the same time, I'm just laying myself down. And that's, when I shifted my mind that way, it's not me only doing it, but I have this greater support. That's when things started to change.
Right. So beautiful. Yeah.
So I'm glad you have good support from both sides of the, you know, the Western medicine and the natural therapy, because though both are very important. I think I've seen many, many cases of cancer now. And when you have the right combination of the two and the supportive treatments, then things can work really well.
Right. And it's one of the things that I love about Reiki is that it has really told me, you know, because I listen to my body now, if I'm drawn to something or not. And, you know, of course, when I first got diagnosed, I had a plethora of, of different things come to me. And I really, I really appreciated the spectrum that was offered. I mean, isn't this amazing that I learned the value of cancer, actually, in our society. I feel that after my experience, one of the things that has happened is that AIDS and cancer have actually demanded people ask, isn't there more?
Yes.
And people have discovered that for one person, it can be visualization. For another person, it could be laughing. For another person, it can be meditation. For another person, Reiki. For another person, totally allopathic care. But that we have the spectrum to choose from is just awesome. And I was so impressed by the love that came with each offering. It was really beautiful.
That's great.
It was great. And I have done really interesting things, and I have things on the back burner that if things get a little bit more intense for me, then, you know, I have those things to go to. But one of the things that I wanted to share with you at the end is that I know that I'm going to go to Brazil and see this man called John of God. And do you know who I'm speaking of?
Yeah, I know quite well,
Oh, I see. So I feel, and I don't know when this is going to happen. I just, sometimes the feeling rises up in me and then it flows away. And I know that when it's the right time, it'll just manifest. And I feel that the healing that I'm working toward is a spiritual healing. And that he is the catalyst for this. And it isn't that Reiki isn't enough. It's just that sometimes, like, I needed a surgeon to do my lumpectomy.
Of course.
And I need my naturopath to make sure my body stays strong. You know, I feel like I'm really drawn to him, and I have been given all these different, what I would call, confirmations of this. And so it's a fascinating process.
Yeah, I have a few people that have gone to Brazil, and I had a friend who had personal experience with his heart condition. And I know, and there have been bad publicity recently because John of God is coming to Australia. There have been a team of people going to Brazil and doing some interviews and all that. But the fact is that John of God as the man is not responsible for the healing.
That's right.
People forget that. It is the various guides, the spirits, the doctors past that he connects to, that he's a vehicle. And these are the beings that come and do the healing according to each person's, you know, need. So if you look at the man, John of God as a man, then it can kind of mislead people. You know, I have had like first-hand experience with my, you know, very reliable friends and patients who went there and had great results because they knew the difference. And they went for that spiritual, So I think when the time comes, and in fact, my wife went when he was in New Zealand. He came some time ago. She went there for 5 days, and you know, she's a very skeptical person, and she didn't really know whether to have. I wanted her to go for, so 5 days she can take a break from the kids and then have a good rest. And if she's open to experiencing something beneficial, she will. But I think it did happen. Something did change her in her health, even though it was very subtle, not obvious. And so it's. But during that time, I had a funny dream where I dreamt I was in Brazil, and I could see exactly how the place was, just on a dirt path, and I saw John of God walking towards me. And I saw him, I said, oh, this man really needs some Reiki because he doing so much. So I gave him a hug, and I was like giving him Reiki, and I could feel his hands touching my back, and I could feel this warm. It was not like Reiki that I had experienced, something like a warm liquid going through my body.
Wow.
So that's very interesting.
Wow, so that's beautiful.
I know there is some connection with John of God and the healing spirits. I'm sure you, when the time comes, you will have benefit from going to Brazil.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I first had a thought that I would stay here and have him do a distant healing. And then my partner, Joyce, just said, you have to go there. You have to experience this in person because that's part of the healing. And I just got it that she was right, totally right. Yeah. You know, it's well, like,
itself,
you know.
The place itself is quite a powerful place, it seems.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, it brings me back to our essential question about Reiki. Yeah. Like, is it me that's giving the treatment? You know, is it Reiki coming through me? You know, do I have to be holy and pure? And, you know, there are all these things that go on, and he's just being really clear. This is not me. These are, this is what's happening. And if you don't believe me, that's okay.
Yeah.
So we're back to our experiences again.
That's right. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, Ranga, it's about time for us to wind it up. And I'm just so thankful we got to have this conversation. It's been beautiful. Oh, very exciting.
The opportunity. I enjoyed having this meeting with you after a long time.
Yes.
Yeah, hopefully we can continue doing some work together.
That would be fabulous. Yeah. I would like that very much. So thank you very much, Ranga. Oh. This is Phyllis Furumoto and Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.